Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, an exploration of the idea of curiosity and its increasing importance for thriving in the digital age from the authors of The Curious Advantage.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Curious Advantage podcast series. This series is about how individuals and organizations use the power of curiosity to drive success in their lives and organizations, especially in the context of our new digital reality. It brings to life the latest understandings from neuroscience, anthropology, history, and behaviorism about curiosity and makes these useful for everyone. My name is Garrick Jones. I'm one of the co-authors of the book, The Curious Advantage, and I'm here today with my co-authors, Paul Ashcroft.
Hello.
And Simon Brown.
Hi, everyone.
And our distinguished guest, Josh Burson. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Garrick. Thank you for inviting me.
Josh is a global industry analyst in HR and HR technology, and we're delighted to have you with us today to talk about curiosity, the role of curiosity, and especially in relation to learning and people development. I guess the first question we have for you is, what is the role of curiosity, and have you seen a new interest in it recently, and why?
It's a really interesting topic because, I've been studying HR and leadership for 20-some-odd years, and the word used to describe this concept tends to change. And, you know, for many years, we used to talk about innovation. And there were hundreds of business books written about innovation and what is it, how do you create innovation, spawn innovation. And then we had digital disruption. And so we looked at agile and digital disruption. And then growth mindset came along. And there was this concept of, oh, maybe people are learning at work and maybe innovation is really part of growth and learning, and then curiosity. And to me, the word curiosity is maybe the most refined concept of all, because it expresses the idea that people have both an urge to explore and understand why something is the way it is. Well, you know, in a business context, curiosity might be, why do we lose that deal? Or why is this product failing? Or why does this price seem to be too high? Or, you know, millions of things like that. But it also connotes learning. So it sort of in some ways wraps together some of the prior thoughts about innovation and creativity into the growth mindset. So I think it's a wonderful trend. The other thing about the word that appeals to me is it's almost a childlike concept. We know that young children are very curious about many, many things because we've all had children or been children, or we know children.
Sure.
And somehow we lose that as we get older because we are more narrow in our thinking and we get more focused on our careers and we think we need to do what everybody else thinks we need to do. And so I think it's also a term that allows us to go back to our human roots, because I do think human beings are sort of wired to learn and wired to be curious. So there's a lot of really positive things about it that I like. So it's starting to become much, much more common in business language.
I'm interested in how you relate that to some of the disruptions that are going on today. We know that the largest disruption of all is digital and the huge impact it's having on the workplace and people's experience of life. And we've got another disruption at the moment, which is the coronavirus, and so many people are experiencing lockdown, and that's putting all kinds of pressures on us, but it's also forcing us to think about organization, think about the way that we work, and think about how we use digital in new ways. But how is curiosity interesting at this time, in this context?
So I think digital transformation is probably a 7 or 8 year old concept that started, you know, somewhere in the early 2000s when companies started to put a lot of products and services online and data became more available in the internet and the cloud became more ubiquitous. And then, you know, companies basically said, oh, whatever it is we're doing, we need to make it digital. And so the original concept was, let's hire a whole bunch of software engineers, build a website, build an app, build a database, and take whatever it is we're selling and add a bunch of digital stuff around it. That was actually a mechanical, not a very curious process. People actually thought it was that simple. And then what they discovered was that actually digital technology changes the way people behave. It changes the way people buy things. It creates a much tighter relationship between consumers and companies, because, you know, you're sort of tethered to each other in a real-time basis. And all of a sudden, your whole company has to operate in a different way. So what we used to say when I was at Deloitte, you can't do digital, you have to be digital.
Yeah.
And being digital means you operate in a digital way and you communicate directly with customers in a very, very real-time fashion. Well, actually, that creates a lot of need for curiosity about how to do that.
Yeah.
Because most of the business models and job models and career models in companies are not oriented towards that. They're oriented towards a functional hierarchy where, you know, my job is to produce this thing and, you know, make this widget or sell this stuff or whatever it may be. So curiosity is the, to me, the new way of rethinking this digital transformation. And then in terms of the coronavirus, you know, in some ways, the coronavirus is the ultimate digital transformation because now everybody's working from home. We can't talk to each other face to face. We have to stay 6 feet away from each other. Pretty soon, we're going to have digital tools that will tell us who we came in contact with, you know, what restaurants we can and can't go to. So we got to be curious about that, too. And nobody really knows the answer to this virus yet. So I think curiosity is a good thread through this whole thing.
I think it's a really interesting one because if we look at digital, it's moving so fast that no one knows what the right answer is. Coronavirus, the current situation is like that. There's no single right answer. No one's experienced this before. And it's curiosity that's going to test out which are the ways, which are the different things that you can try to find, you know, what is the path to tread through this.
This is almost the ultimate challenge of innovation we've had in maybe our adult lives.
Yeah.
How quickly can we figure out how to deal with this little virus that has a life of its own? We're not even sure if there may be a whole bunch of these things, little families of them. So you're right.
Tough times call for tough measures, but they also challenge us. You know, with a fire come, you know, the fire burns away all the chaff, to use an old metaphor. And what remains are the things that work and the good stuff. And what may come out of this is a focus and an understanding of what really works and what we should take forward.
Well, in fact, that's another thing that I think is a big theme of this. What I call this the big reset, just to put some context around it. The economy has slowed for most companies. There's a delayering or, you know, elimination of bureaucracy that's going on too. All of a sudden, everybody is meeting every day and dealing with issues in real time. Whereas a lot of these projects like work at home, or building a database of analytics about who's traveling where. You know, that used to be, we can spend a couple months on that. Nope, you have one day to do that now. So people are realizing they can do things a lot faster when they actually have to than they did before. And that was something we probably should have been curious about for a long time.
Interested as well, Josh, you're working with lots of different companies. Do you see a difference between organizations that are curious and organizations that aren't in terms of how they approach things, in terms of even how they perform?
Yes. There's a bunch of research I'm starting on adaptability, because what occurred to me when I was talking to companies about the COVID crisis was how most of the organizations are becoming much more adaptable than they thought they were. And mostly it's in response to the immediate situation. But if you look at companies in general over a long period of time, usually the companies that go out of business or get bought or sort of fall apart have somehow been locked into their old business, their existing or old business model, and been unable to either pay attention or were not curious enough to explore the concept that maybe some other way of doing this might actually disrupt what we're doing here. And, you know, I'm not the first one to think about this. It goes all the way back to the innovator's dilemma. But you know, I think there has to be a healthy skepticism and questioning of how things work in every successful company, but not to the degree that you don't focus on executing what you have. So it's a kind of a tough balance. Like if I think about Microsoft, for example, everybody kind of knows a lot about Microsoft. When I was a young software guy, we used to compete with Microsoft, and Microsoft was an incredibly aggressive, innovative company. I mean, they built the SQL Server and all the Office tools and, you know, Windows and OS2 and Net, you know, NT, which then became Windows, whatever it was, I forgot what they got renamed. They were really, really creative. And then they turned into a sales company and they really didn't innovate for years. They missed the internet. They missed the search engine business. They missed mobile computing. They bought Nokia. That didn't work out. They just weren't curious. And, you know, their stock languished for a decade, but they had a great sales channel, so they still stayed very successful. Now they're curious again, and look at what's happened. They're one of the fastest growing, most successful tech companies in the world.
Josh, when you refer there to Microsoft, one of the things we also found was that a sort of fear factor had leaked into their culture. They also refer to how curiosity was in some way part of that solution and getting beyond that. How have you seen organizations that have pushed towards curiosity? How has that impacted their people? And what have been the response to people when they've been asked to, hey, you should be more curious in your work?
If you want to simplify a very complex topic, there's kind of two ways to manage people. One is you hold them accountable to some objective or goal or project, and you give them great rewards if they succeed, and you penalize them if they fail. And that's essentially the competitive spirit of management. We're going to put a bunch of guys in the company, we're going to give them all jobs, and the ones that succeed are great, and the other ones, adios, we'll get rid of them. That was Jack Welch's turnaround of GE. It was the competitive assessment of, you know, forced ranking. Many, many management principles are built around that. How we pay people, what the reason we have levels, you know, the reason tenure is so important. All of these kind of hierarchical reward systems are around individual achievement. It's the rugged individual model of management. If you're not tough enough, you can leave and go somewhere else. Now, if you're a creative person and you see something you don't like, it's risky to behave that way in that kind of a culture, because you may challenge the people that are succeeding and you may actually come up with an idea that doesn't work, in which case you get kicked out. So the alternative to that is a philosophy, and I think this is a management philosophy that sometimes comes down to how people actually sort of treat other people in general, that everybody is capable of enormous growth and potential in the right role. And I certainly believe this is true. I think human beings are the most adaptable, you know, beings on the planet. You know, we're a lot more adaptable than software. But we have to be in the right situation. We have to be given the right managers, leaders, teams, organizations. You know, there's all sorts of environmental things that mess us up too. But if you believe in that second management concept, then all of a sudden, you don't think about penalizing somebody who fails. You think about, well, maybe that person was in the wrong job, or maybe we didn't define the problem correctly. And you become curious as a leader. So maybe it comes down to being, how curious are you as a leader? And if it doesn't start at the top and people aren't rewarded for the second model of management, then leaders won't behave that way, or leaders who act that way and feel that way will leave.
You're listening to the Curious Advantage podcast, inspired by the book The Curious Advantage, written by Paul Ashcroft, Simon Brown, and Garrick Jones. Subscribe to the podcast today.
It's fascinating, Josh, because you're talking about a new type of philosophy of management that really impacts and is fit for purpose for a new type of business or organization. Can you tell us a little bit more of some of that philosophy that underpins it in your thinking?
Yeah, it's, you know, and this is, I've been working on a book on this and I don't know if it'll ever get finished, but I think if you look under the covers, there's again, if you simplify it into two types, you know, there's companies that are very, very successful because they hit the nail on the head and their product and their service and their operations are just at the right time and the right place. And, you know, Google was that with the search engine. Microsoft was that with Windows. But nobody does that forever, because there's always somebody who comes along and comes up with a slightly better idea. So then you reach this point like, well, you know, this thing that we really do a lot of really, really well, you know, the margins are going down. It's not growing at the rate we were. We're scratching our heads trying to figure out why. And then you suddenly realize, oh, we need this other philosophy of maybe we should do some experimentation. Maybe we should buy a company that's innovated the way we can. And let's learn from them. And so you become, by nature, a more creative, curious culture. Now, there are companies that don't need to do that. If you're Exxon and you own, you know, gigantic oil fields, you don't have to be that curious until something happens like this week when the price of oil becomes negative. I'll bet there's a lot of curiosity going on in Exxon right now about what to do. So some companies have to be more curious than others. I mean, you know, in the tech industry, you tend to find companies that move to the second model pretty fast because things get disrupted so quickly. So like Cisco is a good example. You know, Cisco, the tech company, you know, Cisco's an old company. Cisco's probably 25, 30 year old company. They've been around a long, long time, but they have learned how to reinvent themselves over and over and over again in with this adaptable culture. They are a very curious culture by nature. You know, when I worked at IBM in the 1980s, we had Tandem out of business, Digital Equipment out of business, Apollo Computer out of business. I could list Sun Microsystems gone. I mean, there's a lot of companies that weren't curious enough. So I think every company has to be some balance of both. And depending on the industry and the economic cycle of your business, sometimes you go more to the first model and sometimes you go more to the second model. The other thing, let me just add one more point on that. All the research on employee engagement, which has been done by hundreds of different vendors and lots of studies, tends to show that employees are much more excited and passionate and engaged at work when they feel that growth culture. They want that. So, you know, most people don't want to be a widget in a machine. Even if they do make good money at it, they would like to have some opportunity to add their personal value to the role they're in. And so, you know, these things that are sort of business strategy issues of being more curious and growth also affect the individuals, your retention rate, the kinds of people that will be attracted to your company. So there, it is sort of a philosophical thing.
I think there's a really interesting part you were touching on as well there, Joshua. You talked about failure. So if we take it that curiosity means experimentation, experimentation means failure, and therefore the acceptance of a company or organization around people to try something and fail and encouraging that and accepting that that's a part of innovation versus your first model that you described, that you're held accountable, you either succeed and get rewarded or you fail and get fired or have a penalty. So I think it is a very strong linkage there between curiosity and that acceptance and tolerance of failure.
Yeah, and it's funny, Simon, I think that's a really good point because the word failure is a funny word. I mean, you know, there are companies that say, you know, we do not fail. You know, don't do anything that's wrong or you'll get in trouble. But actually, I think failure is sort of a meaningless term in business. Everything you ever do has something about it that's not right. I mean, I've never worked for a company that did everything well. There's always a few things that are kind of botched up, or they're not ready yet, or they're not quite as good as they need to be, or they need to be improved. So rather than saying it's a failure, I think I kind of like this idea that I think Jeff Bezos has, is that there are some projects and some initiatives that have irreversible effects, that if you go through that door, there's no going back. And those can be big failures. You know, if you launch into the market something that has a gigantic flaw, you can't just say, oops, sorry, if a million people already have it. So that's, you know, that's not a learning experience. That's kind of like a bad business decision. But if you don't accept and deal with all these little failures that get you there, then you can't iterate to success. So I think the word failure has to be, maybe we should try to wipe it out of business communications.
A learning event of something that happened,
exactly.
That didn't go as expected, and we can take it and learn from it and take the benefit from it.
You know, I had this business at Deloitte that was a research business and had lots and lots of creative ideas for it before we got acquired. And then when we were acquired, it became very much, you know, nah, we don't want to do that. No, that won't work. There were a whole bunch of people saying, no, you can't do this, you can't do that. And I... eventually stopped bringing up a lot of these ideas because I knew that none of them would work out of the box. I knew they would all take time because, you know, Deloitte has a very well-honed business model of selling consulting at a high margin. And when I would come up with these creative product ideas, there were a lot of people that were like, you know, I don't know. We could probably sell another $3 million of consulting, so let's not bother with that. And, you know, that's fine. That's the way that company operates. But, and this came up in the Microsoft conversations too. The people that I know at Microsoft that worked there during the last management philosophy told me they used to be in meetings where senior people, all the way up to Bill Gates, would say, I can't believe you asked such a stupid question. I'm not even going to answer it, which obviously is not a curious comment. they're past that. I'm not telling any dirty laundry. They're very proud of the fact that they're past that stage. But I think there are a lot of companies that still have that kind of thinking.
A curious culture is a game changer. What does curiosity mean for you? Follow hashtag Curious Advantage and join the conversation.
Josh, one of the other things you write about is this the idea of power skills. And we're intrigued by the idea of, is curiosity a power skill? And as people get older or throughout their lives, is it something that they need to continue to work at to stay curious? Or are people just naturally curious throughout their lives?
I think human beings, something in our DNA makes us curious at birth. And we have to learn how to write and talk and eat and communicate and all that stuff. So we're always curious. And then I do think we lose a lot of it as we get older and further down in our career. And then, you know, as we get a little bit older, I think we become curious again because we become a little less focused on what we want to be, a little more focused on who we are. So there's a certain authenticity that allows you to be curious. And I think in companies, it's tough because nobody wants to be in meetings where somebody keeps asking questions. Why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? Why are we, you know, like, if you don't know, just, you know, maybe go read the book. But I think there's a human nature toward it. And I think it, at different stages of life, we become more sensitive to it. I think leaders who are good leaders, I mean, I've been in leadership roles for maybe 25, 30 years. They do learn that more listening and less talking is probably better.
Isn't that true? Tell you another great concept of yours that I like a lot, Josh, is learning in the flow of work. What does this mean for how we construct these new platforms to support learning? If we to construct the learning system in the future, in a completely digital future, let's imagine that scenario, what does that mean for the learner experience and learning in the flow of work?
You know, performance support, real-time learning, you know, tools have been around forever. I mean, long before I came along. I think what's different now is the technology has matured to the point with online technologies for collaboration, cloud-based internet infrastructure, AI and taxonomies, and fast processors that we really can serve up content that is pretty relevant to what somebody's trying to do in a minute-by-minute basis. In the context of learning, we went through a whole era of putting video online when YouTube came along and then learning how to use our phones and then creating micro-learning and trying to define what micro-learning is. And now there's this gigantic marketplace of small and medium and large learning assets, including articles and videos. And, you know, pretty soon they're going to be 3D, little virtual reality things. And all of them have data associated with them. And we now have all sorts of technology that can crawl through that content and read it and understand what it is. So we can actually serve up content that's pretty relevant to what somebody is trying to do on the job. It's a little bit early days, but I think this is one of the biggest renaissance eras in corporate training because the tools are getting mature very, very fast. And, you know, the good example of this is Microsoft Teams and the learning experience platforms and how they integrate. The learning experience platform market is not that old. It's less than 10 years old. And most of those products were designed to be portals. They weren't really very intelligent. But sure enough, as those vendors got more successful, the big companies said, well, you know, this portal is nice, but we need it to be smarter. We need it to be job-oriented, role-oriented. We need it to know how many years you've been in this. How about levels of content, on and on and on. And the vendors added more and more features. And so they're getting more intelligent at serving up appropriate content. And the other thing that made learning in the flow of work easier, I think, was the advertising industry. Because in many ways, all the billions of dollars that were spent on ad tech were people thinking about, how do we serve up the right ad that people are most likely to click on? What do we need to know about this person? What do we need to know about the content? So all that thinking was going on in advertising, which, you know, I consider to be not a particularly great industry, but anyway, it's big. And all those guys wrote all sorts of articles and books. And now the learning technologists are reading it and saying, aha, yeah, that applies to learning too. And why don't we do recommendations? And why don't we do upvoting? And why don't we do recency analysis? And it's a tough problem though, because, you know, serving up an ad is actually kind of simple because all we want people to do is click on it. We don't really care. Whereas a piece of learning has to actually help somebody do their job better. So it's a more complex problem, but I think it's really happening. And, you know, a whole bunch of stuff is integrated into Microsoft Teams now. The LMS vendors are all freaking out about it and they're working on integrated products like this.
I think there's a big opportunity from the sort of integration of the tech ecosystem to really support people being curious and support that curiosity. I'd like to get personal for a moment, Josh, so I look at you as being someone who is hugely curious, and you know, your propensity to produce new thinking and articles seems to be almost on a daily basis. So I'm curious how you maintain your own curiosity and how you structure that curiosity to make sense of, you know, all the things, the sources that you have that sort of feed into that thinking.
Well, you know, I think some of it is my wiring and some of it is my career. My father was a scientist and a musician, so I have sort of that nature of the brain, you know, that I'm very analytical. I almost majored in English, so I've always interested in reading. So I'm one of these people that can read a book and actually learn from the book. And when I fell into HR and became an analyst, you know, I became fascinated by the fact that it's a very, very multidisciplinary space. There's tech, there's the people aspect, there's the business aspect, there's the financial aspect, there's the personality aspect. It's an incredibly multifaceted world. And if you talk to Linda Galloway, who's worked with me for 25 years, if you looked at what I did when I started as an analyst, I was very timid. And I was very afraid to say things because I didn't know if I was going to suddenly say something that somebody else had already written a book that was wrong. So I think some of it was developing self-confidence. And some of it is that I realized that so many people gave me feedback, you guys and many, many clients. They appreciated the fact that I was curious. They appreciated the fact that I was trying to pattern match things that were hard to understand. And I had this unique situation where, as an analyst, I could talk to 100 companies, 100 vendors, and get involved in all the economic and other data. And I could sort of pull data together that most, many, many other people in the industry couldn't do. If you go to Gartner, for example, they don't really think about the big problems. They just talk to vendors and write reports. And what we found in our research business was, I didn't want to do that. I thought that was kind of boring. We did it for a while, but I realized it was more interesting to go beyond that and figure out how these different things were being used and what was working and what wasn't working and why it wasn't working. And so we were always a more curious industry analyst firm than our competitors. And I think that's why we became successful. Is there were like corporate executive board and Gartner and you know, PwC, Saratoga, there were a lot of companies way, way, way earlier than us studying HR. But maybe it was my curious engineering mind that allowed us to just get better at it. And the other thing that I've noticed in our domain, and I'm sure you feel the same way, it's changing so fast that the minute you write down something that seems to be true, you're like, that's not maybe completely right.
Oh, yes.
So I'm always questioning myself.
But you have to write it down to discover that.
Well, every time I push the button on publish, I cross my fingers that somebody isn't going to send me a flaming message that, like, you're a complete idiot. Why did you say that?
Yeah. You know, it's fascinating what you say about confidence, because in our research on curiosity, we discovered that one of the key building blocks of curiosity is confidence, that as you embark on a curious investigation, you learn stuff, you meet more people, you develop a community, you understand the language. But more than that, as you take something on board, you become more confident. And confidence breeds curiosity, which breeds confidence, which breeds curiosity. You know, it's the basis of all of it. That confidence underpins our ability to go into new situations.
Well, I think you're right. I think if you don't have a certain amount of self-confidence, you're sort of afraid to ask a question because you're afraid you might sound silly. I think you're right. You know, another thing I learned in my career, and this also came from my father. I remember my father was a physicist, and he once said to me, you know, if you can find one thing in the world and do that better than anybody else, you'll be happy your whole life. Mm-hmm. And I found that for me, trying to be a generalist or a big shot business guy or whatever, didn't really appeal to me. So as I found something I was good at and I realized I could become better and better at that, it became a wonderful career. And I give that advice to people all the time. Find something you really enjoy and dig in and be curious about that, and your career will flourish.
You know, that's our closing question for you, Josh. What would be the key takeaway for people listening to this conversation? I think you've just given it to us.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, this idea of the T-shaped career where you have a lot of adjacent skills and some deep skills. I think it's okay for people to pick something within the business world or tech or, you know, whatever in their life that they are so passionate about that they just dive in.
And on that note, thank you so much, Josh. It's been great talking to you today.
Oh, you're welcome, you guys. It's a pleasure to talk to you. It's such a fascinating topic. I'm so excited that you guys wrote this book and we get to talk about this.
You've been listening to a Curious Advantage podcast. Join the conversation at #CuriousAdvantage. Subscribe today and keep exploring curiously. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Curious Advantage podcast. Stay tuned for the next episode and keep exploring curiously. This podcast is produced by Aliki Palinelli and edited by John McGinty and Jill Damatak-Futter.